On AgriTalk, we have talked about the demand challenges, I guess, for pork, beef, corn, and the impact on those markets. And we've even featured the challenges that restaurants face as we all stay home and work from home. And so far, we've just mentioned the impact on produce growers. But we're going to dig deep into that today.
Live from under the stairs via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Tom Cart from the Packer. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Joe Del Bosque and Chris Bass. And after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from AgPro Magazine. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. You know, as I continue to hear these different spots that you are at, I'm starting to think that we're going to have to very, very slowly and carefully wean you off of the social distancing and reintegrate you into the community there at the Davis household.
I think you've put your finger right on the button there, amigo. To be honest, in my free time, this is where I would go. I'm broadcasting from my happy place. I don't know how to get me out of the house now, brother. There's, I don't know how you're going to do it. Good luck. Good luck.
Oh, I tell
you,
man.
Hey, I just got to say, I don't even know if this button even works anymore since we've been down here, but hey, look at the corn market.
Yeah.
I got the May corn up 8 cents, July up 8, September up 7.5. Here's your D's at 338.5, up 6.5 on the day, Chip.
Yeah. And I don't want to take any steam out of it. And if the market is responding, it's probably more than rumor. But there are rumors that at the Communist Party meeting yesterday in China, that they decided that their state-owned reserves of some of the commodity, and maybe you're covering this in the news, Davis, I don't know, the reserves, the state-owned reserves of some commodities, including corn, including soybeans, maybe even cotton. What's cotton market doing? Yeah, cotton market. Ooh,
yeah.
That's one of the best days in cotton in a long time. Holy
smokes.
Cotton
likes it. I don't have music for that, but yeah, it likes it, definitely.
What would the cotton music be? I'm curious.
You
know,
yeah. Touch the feel of cotton.
Yeah, we are at the highest level in May cotton now since March 20th. And well off the lows. We have been as low. The first trading day of April, we were as low as in the May contract as I can't hardly even say it, 48.35 in May cotton. And today we've got a high of 55.97. So, yeah, much better.
The studio audience likes it, yeah.
They certainly do. So the cotton market is responding to the idea that maybe China is going to come in here and... Wow.
That's Big Apple Joe playing Cotton Eye Joe. We can't get started today. We just... There's too many distractions here in my own beat laboratory.
Oh, my goodness. So maybe we're seeing some response to the idea that China's going to rebuild some of the state-owned stocks. But we've been down this path before. You know, I hope it's true. I hope it's true. Okay,
I'm taking every bit of joy as we can get it. Let's go.
Good.
U.S. crude oil output could fall by as much as 20% as operators struggle amid declining prices and full coffers. A Houston-based analyst, Raul LeBlanc from HIS Market, told Bloomberg, quote, "Everything back in the field except the newest and most productive wells is losing money on a cash cost basis. At this price, you'll start shutting in large amounts of production." President Trump is looking for ways to financially support and stimulate the industry, although sources say producers have not made appeals for financial assistance. Chip, the International Monetary Fund estimates Saudi Arabia needs $76 a barrel to balance its government budget. Russia breaks even around $45, while U.S. shale producers need to fetch roughly $50 per barrel, Chip.
Well, Saudi Arabia can probably continue to pump when we're sitting with June futures at 15:27 here this morning. But
I would think
everybody, most other countries are in the red here.
Tensions are flaring between the United States and China, and President Trump has suggested Beijing should face sanctions if China was knowingly responsible for the coronavirus outbreak. The state of Missouri has already filed suit against the Chinese government, along with other top institutions, for their role in the pandemic. And Chip, to be honest, I wouldn't even have brought it up if Missouri hadn't filed a suit, but that seems to give this idea some teeth.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it and see how it progresses here. There's going to be some sort of a comment coming from the federal level on whether or not Missouri can pursue this any further, and even then it may be challenged. You know how you know how some of these how some of these cases brought by a state can be.
Yep. Well, quickly, the Senate has approved a $484 billion aid package designed for small businesses and hospitals. The House will take up the measure tomorrow. The increased funding for the Paycheck Protection Program is not expected to last long, as citizens are anxious for financial relief. President Trump officially announced a temporary suspension of green cards for at least 60 days, saying the move will put, quote, unemployed Americans first in line for jobs when America reopens. Major beef market moves will be the focus of a CFTC panel today, with USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue in attendance. And the Bipartisan National Governors Association was scheduled to release its own plan today to reopen the economy. The 38-page roadmap to recovery says governors should continue to request the federal government rapidly build testing capacity and coordinate distribution to states. Chip.
Okay. Thank you so much, Davis. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp. Margie is the editor of Ag Professional, joins us right now. How you doing, Margie?
Chip, doing okay this morning.
Good, good, good. You got a survey on the cover of the magazine. What's that about?
Yeah, so it's our April cover story, which is just hitting mailboxes now and will be available online very soon, but this is our annual salary survey. So we're just looking to bring some additional information into the market on specific to entry-level salaries of applicator or machine operators, as well as entry-level sales agronomist. Just a couple of trends to note.
Yeah.
We are seeing increased influence on what local competitors pay, having an impact on what retailers offer in terms of entry-level salaries. We also are seeing actually a slight decline in some of the benefits offered. Something we'll continue to watch. And maybe just a third takeaway is while the base salary of sales agronomist went down from 2018 to 2019, it has gone back up in 2020. However, we are seeing a steady small decline in that base salary for applicator and machine operators. So an aspect of our survey is monitoring how bonuses are awarded. So we'll dig into that definitely deeper.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Now, the applicator salaries, might that be because more people have gotten into the profession?
Potentially, you know, it's a really interesting thing. And, you know, spring 2020 is bringing its own unique challenges, right?
Sure.
But you mentioned unemployment, and we know right now retailers are having a hard time finding seasonal labor. So while this survey doesn't address seasonal labor, it is something that we're trying to keep our fingers on the pulse of.
Yeah, boy, speaking of seasonal labor, we're going to be spending some time as we talk about it in the Farmer Forum today. Joe Del Bosque out in California's Central Valley is going to be hitting that hard for us, I'm sure. All right, Margie, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chip.
You bet. That's Margie Eckelkamp, the editor of Ag Pro. Coming up next, we've got Tom Karst, editor of The Packer, right here on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
Davis, boy, you speak about farming on.
Yes.
There is a lot of farming on going on across the country today.
The farming on is going on the farm, farming on today.
Yes.
It's ongoing.
Ongoing.
Yes. capital O, capital N. Heavy on the on.
Yes. Send your pictures of how you are in the middle of Farm On in the spring of 2020. Mm-hmm. It's capital F, capital O-N, one word, Farm On. Mm-hmm. Text that picture to 31313. And it may just show up out there someplace. So, yeah.
Seen a lot of tweets. It looks like looks like they're working in like the basic farm equivalent of, say, Breckenridge powder, you know, for skiers.
Oh,
like the perfect conditions in some of these spots here. It's beautiful to see.
Right. People. Yeah. A lot of guys just can't stay out of the field right now because the conditions are as good as they are. Now, soil temperatures in a lot of cases are still too cold, but boy, the ground is working really well. Yep. So they're wanting to get out things going. Okay, let's get to Tom Karst. Tom is the editor of the Packer, and I feel like I need to say this because for our group, Tom, normally when we talk about the Packer, we're talking about meat packers, but the Packer covers fresh produce industry. Your readers, Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, but we're talking about retail and food service are your primary audience, right, Tom?
That's right. They've got the retail buyers, the food service buyers, and then we have the grower shippers as well. They are readers and also advertisers in our weekly newspaper and, of course, the website as well. So,
right. How you doing down there, Tom? Everything good?
You know, it's busy. We're working from home, doing a lot of Zoom interviews, and doing some webinars. We've got one this afternoon with Category Partners. That's talking about the retail performance and what's happening at retail, which is a big concern to everybody right now. And, of course, the USDA's assistance program that's going to help these food service distributors get some money to continue operations. So that's part of it as well.
Hey, tell me a little more about this webinar that you got going this afternoon. What's it about? Where? When?
You know, it's at 2 Central, and it's promoted at thepacker.com right at the top of the page. It's with Category Partners, and they're going to look at the retail performance of a lot of different commodities since March, since this whole thing started. So it's going to be of great interest, and it's easy to register for. Of course, it's free, so that's easy to do if you want to look in on that.
You know, that's one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, and I don't want to, you know, front run it or anything like that, but I wanted to look at it from this perspective because, well, let's back up. I need to back up. the damage that has been done to the restaurant and the food service side. Tom, are you describing it as demand destruction or demand disruption? And what I really want to know is, are we seeing demand at the retail level make up for what has been lost at food service?
I think you're seeing a good part of that made up at the retail level, but it's not directly transferable in every sense. I guess the numbers I've heard from one analyst says that about 85% of our fresh fruit and 65% of our fresh vegetables are typically sold at retail, with the balance going to food service. So you got 15% fruit, 35% vegetables sold at food service. So that's a lot of product to make up for. And so, I mean, the consumers did buy a lot of produce when they stocked up. But some items are just harder. You know, if you've got a food service big bag of lettuce, it's hard to get that to the retail customers in the same way. So there's been a transition. It's been kind of rough for people. Yeah. But and a large part, I think, business has accommodated some of that demand, but not all that product.
Right. Regionally, Tom, what areas might be hurt the most? I know the guys in Florida have had to destroy some of their crops. Is it happening in any place else?
Yeah, you know, that has happened in Texas, I've heard, and in California as well. So I don't know the extent of it, but I do know that it's happened. I mean, some items, maybe the niche vegetables that are really maybe an Asian vegetables that would go to a particular type of restaurant, they just don't have an easy outlet at retail. So you've got all these things that all these niche items, perhaps the more perishable items aren't doing so well lately because people are making less trips to the supermarket as well. So they're thinking longer term shelf life for some of these items.
Yeah. Yeah. I am. And I'm a fresh produce guy, Tom. But I tell you, I've got more canned vegetables in the pantry than I normally would because I'm not going as often to the grocery store. Yeah. So
yeah. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, it's crazy, crazy.
It is. It is. And you know, people think. I know we had a story about Chinese citrus that you know the USDA is going to open up the market for Chinese citrus, and a lot of people were. Like, why are we importing Chinese citrus? And it's yeah. not very much to start with, but the whole idea of imports is that, why do we need them? We seem like we have a lot of farmland in this country that we can produce crops. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the consumer has gotten used to a year-round supply.
Yeah.
I think about 40% of our fruit is imported, excluding bananas, and about 31% of our vegetables. So, you know, just as a... The world has gotten smaller in some ways, so we've got a lot of import supply combined with the domestic. So it's a lot of product out there.
Here's my favorite example of gotten used to having it available year round. How do I get? How do I get blueberries in the middle of winter here in Iowa? And I love blueberries. But
exactly, isn't that great?
Yeah,
You've got Peru, you've got Chile, you've got all these Latin American yep. countries that have geared up for that demand. So,
yep.
you know, that's pretty amazing how they can get it done.
Right. On the import side right now, Tom, there seems to be some anxiety over some product coming in from Mexico. Are you hearing that?
You know, there's always a little tension with Mexican imports, there's always a feeling that the prices they bring product in are below sustainable levels, and so you hear a lot about that concern from the Southeast. I haven't heard in recent weeks about that in great detail, but I know that's always a concern for growers that are in a competitive window right. with Mexico. So,
yeah. And then, of course, we've got the whole currency relationship and the peso being as cheap as it is against the U.S. dollar. That is making that Mexican-sourced or Mexican-origin product awfully attractive to some of the retailers out there, and putting it in the produce aisle is hard to resist sometimes. Tom, we've been... When we talk about the impact of the event that we're going through right now, whether it be with the hog industry, the cattle industry, corn industry, ethanol in particular, we've been talking about what does this look like when we come out the other end? Is there going to be more cold storage for the meats? Is there, you know, we go, but for your guys, Tom, they depend so much on fresh. That is there going to be much change when we come out the other end of this?
You know, people, we are blessed to be in an industry where people need to eat and people are still going to want fresh produce. I think some of the industry is thinking that this online grocery business is yeah. going to increase, and they've got to get positioned so that people think of fresh produce when they shop that online order. So that's one of the concerns. And then, of course, some people say maybe 20-30% of restaurants may just close up after this and
yep.
it won't be available. So that's gonna be a stark reality for those guys that sell to those restaurants.
Right. Well, yeah. So at the retail level for the produce, Tom, it's pretty easy because you walk in the front door and in most cases, right there's the produce. It's easy as a reminder, right?
Exactly. Yeah. The supermarkets have done a great job of keeping the department stocked, and that's been one thing that hasn't been cleaned out that much, at least apart from the first week or two, maybe.
Right.
So yeah,
right.
There's plenty of supply out there.
Yeah. Real quick, Tom. I mean, 30 seconds. What's your greatest concern right now for the whole industry?
I think for this period here in the summer and. Is making sure the labor is continuing to be able to show up to work in California farms and in the packing houses and supermarkets. And then after that, kind of reassessing what that leaves us with after that. And trying to rebuild the structure of that food service demand will be a big concern.
Right. Very good. Very good. Tom, thank you so much. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks a lot.
You bet. That is Tom Karst. Tom is the editor of The Packer for Farm Journal. Okay. When we come back, we're going to get this farmer forum going. We got Joe from California and Chris from Iowa up next on AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, this corn market looks like it's trying to confirm that we posted a long-term double bottom on the charts yesterday.
Yeah, that 301 that we talked about, Chip, yep, on the weekly continuation chart, bounced back significantly from that. And we're up about 8-9 cents in the front month contracts right now. A lot going on there. First off, talk that China may be buying a significant amount of commodities, including corn, and some others to replenish some stocks. So soybeans is on the list. Cotton's on the list. Those markets are both favoring the upside, especially cotton. But wheat wasn't on the list, and it's under pressure. So I think that has some of the influence on price action today with the spreading between corn and wheat going on.
Gotcha. Boy, it would be nice if we could see some confirmation of this. I don't like the fact that soybean meal isn't participating in it, though, Beach.
No, meal isn't participating, and that's kind of holding the soybeans back here. Soybeans were running pretty solidly, but have backed well off their highs because of that pressure on the meal market. So that is a definite weight.
Yep.
You know.
Take us over to the plus signs in the livestock trade.
Yeah, a little bit of a firmer tone in both the live cattle, feeder cattle, and hog markets today. We are seeing the most strength in the May hogs, that front month contract up sharply, narrowing up the discount to the cash. And we've talked about that, and that market has to come in line with the cash market. Now we have basically a month until expiration, so there's time, but they're working on that today.
Very good. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by BASF, introducing the swift, simple, secure corn solution, Veltima Fungicide.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Hey, Davis, what do you say we get right into this farmer forum, man?
I think I'm ready. Yeah.
All right.
Let's do that. Let's do it right now.
Absolutely, because I want to give these two guys as much time as we possibly can as we talk about what's going on in the produce markets and how the COVID event is impacting their businesses. Joe Del Bosque out in California, Central Valley of California. How you doing, Joe? Welcome back to the Farmer Forum.
Well, good morning, and thanks for having me here. We're doing as well as we could under these circumstances, but it's a new experience for us.
Absolutely. Now, Joe, you've been on before, and we've talked about what your operation is, but I made a special note here because it is kind of a special produce focus that we are doing today. Tell us about your operation.
All right. Well, our biggest crop is organic melons. We grow cantaloupe, honeydew, specialty melons, mini watermelons, and now we're growing some hard squash also. We also grow some almonds and cherries and some organic asparagus, which we're harvesting right now as we speak.
Wow. Good. Okay. We'll get right back to you, Joe. I want to bring in Chris Bass from Eastern Iowa. Chris, it's good to talk with you again, buddy. It's been a long time. How you doing?
Well, with everything being said, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah. So, again, you've been on before, but it's been a while. Let's hear about your operation because, obviously, it's different than what Joe is doing.
Sure. So, we are a kind of a hybrid model. We are a medium to large size agritourism farm.
Yep.
We specialize in about 15 acres of pumpkin. So we grow about 15 acres of pumpkins. We sell those right off the farm. We retail everything right off the farm. We grow about 10 acres of organic vegetables, and we sell those direct to the consumer through our retail store. And we do some small wholesaling as well. Over the years, with the changing market conditions, we're constantly innovating and constantly pivoting. And yep. So we've added lots of different sources of revenue that have really helped our farm throughout the years. So
it's been incredible to watch what you're doing down there, Chris. It's been so much fun to see that whole, you know, the whole area develop that you've got. That you've got down there. It's been a lot of fun. And hey, 10 acres of garden is nothing to sneeze at, in my opinion. But so Joe just said that they are harvesting asparagus right now. It's a little bit of a different time for you, isn't it? What are you guys up to right now, Chris?
So right now we're more in the planting phase. I don't focus primarily too much on our spring crops here, just to the fact that the last 5 or 6 years we've had really, really rough spring weather.
Yep.
And so, you know, we'll plant beets, radishes, carrots, cabbage, and you know, it's kind of hit or miss on how well the yields are due to the fact that we don't spray and all those things. So we really focus on the things that we're good at, and right now we're prepping for prepping the fields have been prepped to plant. We've already pulled raised beds. The irrigation is set up, and we are also getting our retail nursery ready to go. So we're in full swing right now, you know, just getting the farm, everything up and open.
Good.
We officially opened the 15th, but it's been a very wild experience due to COVID. And I would love to share with you guys.
You bet.
About that.
You bet. We're going to get into that here in just a second, but I want to get back to Joe here real quick. Joe, what has been the biggest challenge in this COVID event that we're all dealing with that you've got out in the Central Valley?
Well, a couple of things. As Tom mentioned earlier, the markets have been challenging. That hit us early on. Markets got soft. And we're just starting in our asparagus. We're just starting to come out of, you might say, red ink this week. And we still got about maybe 3 weeks to go. The other challenge, of course, is making sure that we have our labor safe and healthy. We have this early in the season, we have adequate labor. And we're out there with them a lot. We've had tailgate meetings, explain to them what we know about COVID, explain to them how it's infected and how to keep themselves safe, and trying to get them, you know, the PPE that they need. It's hard to get. That stuff is pretty scarce, but we're just trying to keep keep their fears down. And luckily, so far, no one has missed work.
Joe, how receptive are the workers to the message about this is how you stay safe while you can stay on the job?
Our workers take it pretty well, because we've already had a very stringent food safety policy now for years. And a lot of the things that keep you safe from COVID are already in our food safety program. Things like washing your hands, things like calling in sick. Things like, you know, sneezing in your elbow and not out in the open. Those sorts of things have already been in our program. So now we added things like social distancing and things like that. Like anybody else, they have fears about, you know, who possibly is sick in the crew, right?
Right. Joe, what do you think about President Trump's decision to temporarily end green cards and immigration into the country? I know that there's some exceptions on the H-2A farm workers, right?
Yeah, as far as I know, I think H-2A is going to continue, and that's a good thing, because I think there's a total of 160,000 H-2A workers in agriculture, and we desperately need those, because if we don't have those, you take 160,000 workers out of the workforce, and all of a sudden, you got a shortage. Oh. And the other thing is whether he's going to tighten up the border. We right. do have in the summertime, not right now, a block of people that come into the country in the summer, work, and then go back.
Right.
And we're a little right. concerned about those because the summer's when we typically find most of
right.
our workforce being tight.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, Chris, COVID-19 event, how's it impacted your farm?
Well, it's been pretty crazy. I've been wildly worried about it. I actually picked up a winter job when I saw this coming. So I took a secondary form of income with a company out of Virginia. This was my first step. And I work on ag-related connected solutions. So, like, we come up with the technology for grain bin monitoring and temperature probes, and we develop new solutions that the farmer or the business entity in the farm community brings to us. We actually have engineers on staff, and with my background, I'm able to help get turnkey solutions for farmers. Secondly, we, on top of getting a job, we had to, all of our part-time workers, we had to let them know that, you know, we have our full-time workers are our first priority, obviously. And we unfortunately had to put all of our part-time workers on a temporary furlough. I don't know what you want to call it.
Yeah,
Due to the fact that, you know, we have to keep our full-time employees hours up. And so right now we are down from about 10 employees to 2 full-time employees. We've had to scale back on what I was planning on growing. I'm not going to grow as much due to the fact that the majority of my customers, or I would say half of my customers, are high-end restaurants, and therefore they're not opening. They're closed currently, and I don't know what the demand is on that. So the reality is that it's a very tough environment. The truth of the matter is with those restaurants being closed, I'll probably terminate the crops that I'm not going to plant versus planting them and then take care of them all season. But I have seen a silver lining in this. And the silver lining for me, and I think everybody should see, is during this slowdown, and when we all have this time to sit and reflect, it's a great time to look at our farm. And it's a great time, because things are slow, that it shows you what is really great about your farm and what is not so great. Mm-hmm. These kind of problems present the cracks in your operation. And that's a silver lining, because this is a great opportunity to take those things that are great and run with them. And it's a great opportunity to drop the things that are bad. And so I'm kind of looking at the silver lining in that. You know, what is, whatever can last through this is probably something that is very, very sustainable. Flower season for us is in the air. That's another concern for us and all other farms like mine, due to the fact we're on a lockdown in the state of Iowa till the 30th. Flower season typically would be, you know, people would be buying flowers right now. Currently, we don't have anybody in our greenhouse, nor do we even have the flowers in the greenhouse. The other challenge we have this year is due to the fact that we also sell high-end hydroponic organic lettuce. We don't have the market for that. So I have a $200,000 hydroponic setup that we have made the executive decision not to turn on this year. And that's a very, these are facts. These are realities of the times we live in. But that is very sad. Now back to the labor challenges.
Chris, we're up against a hard break, Chris, but I want to come back and talk more about those labor challenges. Are you tapping the SBA loans that are available to you? Does it work for you? Stuff like that. Man, interesting conversation. We're talking produce on the Farmer Forum.
AgriTalk is brought to you by BASF and the No Compromise, No Excuses Soybean Solution, Revitech Fungicide. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM. AgriTalk.
Yeah, special shout out to America's Conservation Ag Movement today because they are the sponsor of the Farmer Forum every week. Trust in Food, a Farm Journal initiative, Farm Journal Foundation, USDA's NRCS, American Farmland Trust, Corteva, Ducks Unlimited, NCGA, National Pork Board, Sanderson Farms, Syngenta, Nature Conservancy, and Valent are all key partners in America's Conservation Ag Movement. Let's get back to the Farmer Forum. We've got Joe Del Bosque out in the Central Valley of California, Chris Bass in East Central Iowa. Joe, we were talking about with Chris the loss of that restaurant market. Boy, that looking forward, how do you see that impacting your overall business, Joe?
Well, it certainly puts a lot of produce out there without a home. And, I have a son-in-law that grows a lot of produce over in the Salinas Valley, and you don't necessarily see them disking up fields, but they're doing what's called walk-by, and that is they're cutting the fields and they're leaving a lot of stuff behind and just picking out the best and leaving the stuff that, you know, could be packed and just leaving it behind because that's the stuff that would have gone to food service. We're hoping, you know, and we're praying for our food service industry to come back to normal as soon as possible. Restaurants, schools, which are not going to come back until the fall probably, and others that buy a lot of our produce. It's a terrible hit on that market, and we're trying to adapt, but, you know, there's only so much we can do because the stuff that's being planted now is for summer.
Right.
And so we're just hoping that the market comes back by then.
Yeah, Chris, obviously it's having an impact not only on your plans for this year, but those high-end restaurants were a big part of your business plan.
Yeah, they're a huge part of my market. I built that hydroponic system just for them. It's state of the art. They want the really good products and they want it to be affordable, and we're able to do that. But the only way we're able to achieve that is through volume. And so I cannot turn it on for 10 heads because the whole system runs 1,800 heads and it has to run all at once. So it's wildly inefficient. When we don't have the customers, because just the electric bill to run the lights is about $1,100 a month.
Right.
Some of the things I feel like I really should get out there is that as a farmer, don't be afraid to ask for help.
Yep.
Don't be shy. I was the first person to turn in my PPE loan at Midwest One Bank. The vice president of the bank hadn't even seen one before. And it's because that's how heavy I was following the legislation, as well as the COVID disaster economic recovery fund that was set up for all businesses.
Yeah.
And so fortunately, we were one of the first people in line for the PPE. We did get our payroll covered for 2 months. It's not perfect, but it's better than nothing.
Right.
And we did get, yesterday we found out we got approval on the grant, which is the disaster recovery fund. And you get $1,000, I believe, per employee. And, you know, it's not a lot, but it makes a huge difference when you're struggling.
Right.
And so for all the people that say that farmers get too much help or don't need help, we do need help. And we need the government's help. We need our local community's help. And we need everybody's support. The biggest thing I could say is, I don't know if, do you have a Facebook page?
Yeah.
With your farm?
Yeah.
What's your Facebook page?
Joe, do you have a Facebook page for your farm? You do, don't you?
I do. Yes. Yeah. Del Bosque Farms. At Del Bosque Farms. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like all I can say is if you're out there listening, go to his Facebook page. Can you say that louder?
It's at Del Bosque Farms.
Del Bosque.
Yeah, go. The best thing you can do for us farmers is go to our Facebook page like his, or you can go to mine at Bass Farms LLC and just say, hey, you know, if you're doing a good job, or just like our page, just so we feel the support from the community. Because it's a very struggling time for farms. We need your help. Real quick, one of the things we did that has made a huge difference is this is forcing farmers out of their comfort zone. And what I mean by that is we're doing it, this is forcing us to innovate. I know a lot of farms are already online. I've been hesitant to do that. We did that this year, and between the government and us putting our products online, that is the only thing keeping us afloat. So I cannot stress the fact that we need to use the technology, use what is available to us to move our product. We opened last Wednesday. We have a curbside pickup. We load your car. There are ways to get through this. Exactly. We just have to be very innovative.
Exactly. Good, excellent stuff, Chris. Joe, real quick, the USDA program on the food purchases includes $100 million in produce a month, along with meat, along with dairy, $300 million total. Is that the kind of help that we need? Is that money going to get all the way back to the farm?
Well, I hope so. You know, government programs sometimes work very slowly, but some of these programs have been working fairly fast. But, you know, I think that is a way to save food from going to waste. Like I said, crops that were being left in the field, they could have gone somewhere, but farmers can't afford to pick and pack those without getting paid for them. And if this government program helps to pick up some of that food and not go to waste, I think it's a great program.
Excellent. Excellent. You guys, I feel for you both. I mean, you're dealing with issues that I can't even imagine having to deal with. Keep your chins up and good luck. We'll make it through it, okay? Joe, thank you, buddy.
Thank you. Good luck
to
everybody.
That's Joe Del Bosque out in the Central Valley, and Chris Bass. Chris, thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem. Have a great day.
You too. That's Chris Bass right in East Central Iowa. Okay, you guys, we're going to keep the conversation going this afternoon on keeping up with issues. We've got Dr. Dermot Hayes from Iowa State University on.